Blog Talk Radio.
Indeed, 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 it's the Pancakes and Power Slam show. A special shout out to both of the past theme songs, including the previous one, the actual anthem from the Pancakes and Power Slam show, the theme song. Just as a little shout out of last week, we celebrated our marquee 10th anniversary. We didn't give that a shout out, so happy 10th anniversary. Not anniversary, but more of a 10th episode, 10th show episode. This is episode number 11, so definitely want to give that some props. I am Chris Featherstone, soon to be joined by Ryan Fuqua. Be sure to call in 347-884-8452, and we are ready to go. Last week's errors, of course, Randy Orton. He actually competed in SummerSlam of 2004. In the Big Show, he defeated Brock Lesnar in Survivor Series of 2002. And Ryback's first handicap match was, in addition to SmackDown, which was May the 25th of 2012. So, this week's news. Ken Doan, or Kenny Dykstra, or Spirit Squad, as you would know him in the WWE. He actually spills the beans on and just felt the need to rehash on a past relationship in the WWE between Mickie James and John Cena back in 2000, I believe it was 2007, 2008, when they were dating. And if you don't know, Kenny Dykstra and Mickie James were engaged at one point in time, and we see where that went. There's major heat for Vince McMahon as a result of mocking JR. I made mention to it last week about it just being tasteless. Wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report, got a lot of reads, a lot of comments about it, and mostly people thought it was tasteless, and there's others who just believe for some reason it was not as bad, and just, you know, it's just a part of the joke on Jim Ross. It wasn't that serious, and it's just one of those things that people have to realize that there's certain whether it's fact or fiction, or you know, acting or real, there's only certain, you know, there's certain lines you can cross, and that's definitely something that you don't want to mess around with. And no matter how you feel about it. The act itself is just a tasteless act. Someone having Bell's palsy and doing so much for the business, it's just not a good deal to try to fill a spot and whimsically just kind of do a spot like that and just really kind of mock the facial expression of someone who would have a physical ailment like that. So it's not only just Jim Ross, it's just, you know, everyone who deals with that as a whole. So this wasn't a good act at all. And then the main story this week is Ric Flair is officially released from TNA contract. There was a few rumors about it. I wrote an article about this on Bleacher Report as well a few weeks ago about when it first came out. It's official now, but when it first came out, he just basically just stopped appearing at shows and just felt the need to no longer be a TNA roster member anymore. A lot of rumors actually stemmed from him kind of playing the script differently during the TNA Gut Check Challenge with Alex Silva. Because Alex Silva lives in Canada, he was actually scripted not to get the contract. Ric Flair was going to say no, and but what happened was he changed his mind last minute. I mean, Alex Silva did do a pretty poignant promo, and you know, if it wasn't scripted, I would have changed my mind too, because he didn't really he didn't really impress me enough for a contract in the beginning, but his promo definitely sold him. But you know, people, wrestlers know, you know, the power of the script, and it's just a taboo thing for someone to cut the script and just go differently. So, you know, he basically, there was some things going on with that, and unfortunately he was reprimanded for it and felt the need to say, I don't need TNA anymore. And that this is where we have. So, so that's the news. Feel free to call in, like I said, 347-884-8452. We got a lot to cover. Got No Way Out. We've got, of course, we got Raw. We got SmackDown, and then Impact Wrestling, ROH, and then the flavor of the week, as we do every week. The chat room is open for you. Special shout out to our sponsor for the show, WrestleManiacs. Check them out on Facebook, WrestleManiacs. And they're very, very current with different promotions, not only WWE or TNA or ROH, but they definitely do other indie promotions such as Dragon Gate USA and a couple other indie promotions that we don't know too much about, but they're, you know, popular wrestlers do compete on them. So special shout out to WrestleManiacs. All right, well, let's go on to the No Way Out pay-per-view. We had the first match as being the World Heavyweight title for the World Heavyweight Championship. Sheamus defeats Dolph Ziggler. And we saw new gear for the both of them, some type of red gear for Sheamus and some type of powdered blue gear for Dolph Ziggler. Wasn't really a big fan of either one of them. And it was someone who was where I was watching. There was someone who made a comment that said Sheamus's gear makes him even more pale. So that was an interesting observation that I also concurred with. Of course, we got the Let's Go Ziggler chance, something to definitely expect from the crowd, especially since Ziggler is just really getting more and more face pops, and a lot of the viewers are just waiting, a lot of the fans are just waiting for the WWE to go ahead and pull that plug on Ziggler's heel run and make him either just a bona fide face or a world champion, a solidified world heavyweight championship run, and not just a few minutes of getting handed the title and losing within a matter of minutes to Edge back when he did win the title. So kudos to this match. Just as I expected, it was just like their other matches. It was a good match. The both of them could put together a good show. And like I said before, it just bothers me that they would just throw away this feud. This feud has a lot of potential, and it just really has the opportunity to be a good feud, even a WrestleMania style feud. And you know, unfortunately, they're just throwing it together. So then we got the next match, which was Santino versus Ricardo Rodriguez tuxedo match. Just a terrible display of any type of U.S. title match. I have to do a lot of research about just the U.S. title matches, but this is definitely has to be one of the worst. And it's matches from a U.S. champ. The thing is, the U.S. championship wasn't even online, is what I found out at the last minute. And it was just a tuxedo match. And my thing is this, I like Santino a lot. He's a comic relief. I just really like him. I like what they're doing with him. I like his run. But at the same time, having matches like this is just a disgrace to the prestige of the U.S. title. I mean, you talk about your Stings, your Dusty Rhodes, your Lugers, your Flairs, your Wyndhams. Things like this really takes, I mean, your Steamboats, things like this really takes away the prestige of the U.S. title. I mean, he hasn't really had a credible feud really at all, I mean, since he's had the title. I'm just not a fan of it. He beat Swagger from Ford, and I'm just not a fan of the fact that they are doing this to him. He didn't even have a U.S. title match at WrestleMania. If I'm not mistaken, he had the was it like a 10-man, he led the Laurinaitis versus Long brand versus brand match for the supremacy of the who's going to be the general manager for the WWE. So he didn't even get an opportunity to defend his U.S. title then. So it's kind of tough for me to see how they could do this with him. It's really a disgrace to the U.S. title. And if they really want him to have it, I mean, he needs to have a lot better feuds than Ricardo Rodriguez, and it wasn't even for the title. Of course, Santino won, and then Ricardo Rodriguez, similar to the Justin Bieber, the Justin Bieber shirt that he had on, he had Alberto Del Rio underwear. So a little comic relief from Ricardo Rodriguez, and he's doing a really good job with that. And then we saw Christian versus Cody Rhodes, a real good match, as I expected. It's just that Cody Rhodes, it's really tough for me to really see any type of uprise right now as far as Cody Rhodes. He had an opportunity to be one of the top guys in the WWE as far as a bona fide heel is concerned. He established himself, and then the whole Intercontinental title back and forth, and just wasn't a good idea for them to do this. And I was hoping that when the Big Show won, when he won the Intercontinental title, I was actually hoping that they would take Cody Rhodes and send him to a upper level mid-carder or even main event level heel, and maybe have a little world title feud just to test the waters and see what they could do as far as having him be, you know, the top guy. But unfortunately, he actually sold to a spear by Christian, and that actually really surprised me. I mean, they did try their, you know, they did try the finishers. I believe that Cody Rhodes tried the disaster kick twice, unfortunately. We had to see a spear, and I read some tweets and things like that, and people just really thinking that Christian is just a kind of like a shadow of Edge, and you know, he has that title to him at times. Not by me. I think he's definitely his own wrestler and does a really good job at it. But at the same time, I mean, you doing things like the spear as a finisher is just not really a good way to get you out of that shadow for all the people who are antagonizing Christian. Like I said before, Christian is just he's revitalizing the Intercontinental title scene right now, and it's really good. I actually pitched an idea before, as far as where the IC title could go. I saw and pitched an idea that they could revitalize the scramble match and have it at SummerSlam and have the people who he has defeated just on regular matches and on pay-per-view. So you have Cody Rhodes, you have Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, Hunico, Jinder Mahal, but we're not really going to count him, Drew McIntyre, and add someone like Sin Cara, maybe another babyface in there, and have a 7-8-man championship scramble. It was a good idea beforehand when they had it for the world heavyweight title. Maybe because I'm being partial because Chris Jericho won, but just the concept as a whole was a good idea. And they only had it once, and they should bring it back. So I definitely would be okay with that as far as the Intercontinental title was concerned. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes. And of course, when Raw comes, when I talk about Raw, we'll see where actually that went, and in an article that I wrote about the aftermath of both No Way Out and Raw, left us with a bunch of puzzling questions. So feel free to call in. What's a Raw and No Way Out? What's a No Way Out feelings and thoughts and opinions? We'll be taking calls all throughout the evening. Bringing on a co-host here soon. 347-884-8452. Then we saw a four-man tag match, and it was Primo Nepico against Tyson Kidd and a return of Justin Gabriel on main TV, and they went against the Primetime Players, and also the fourth team was the Usos. Now, I really, at first, I liked the whole concept of the four-man tag team match. It was a good way to kind of supplement the fact that R-Truth is out with the broken foot, so this is definitely a good tag spot match, and I like what they did right there. This is so that basically there's, you know, at least five legitimate tag teams. Four of them can vie for the tag team titles. Now I heard over the commentary that the automatic rematch clause expired. And I was, at first I was thinking, okay, this is really kind of weird. And it was just, why would it expire? Because we haven't seen Primo Epico, Rosa Mendez, and AW in a few weeks. And it just really kind of made me wonder about that. But it was a nice double kick. As far as the match is concerned, a couple spots that I definitely want to give a shout out to. Nice double super kick by the Usos. I believe they kicked Titus O'Neil, if I'm not mistaken. And then Tyson Kidd had a really nice Hurricanrana spot to basically hits everybody outside. And you know, so I was happy with how the match went. And then the end really made me happy, very much. We actually saw AW leave Primo and Epico, and then go to the primetime players, and I loved it. If you listen to the show weekly, you would know that. I'm a big fan of the primetime players and think it's a very good idea for them to have that, to be a credible tag team. At first, I didn't like them at all, especially when I would see them feud with each other on NXT, and they really bored me. Titus O'Neil, sawing him on the original NXT, really didn't do anything for me. He tried to be a face, and his mic work was just awful. He's just real kind of stiff, really on the mic, and just really his wrestling skills were very subpar. But then Darren Young, he's had a number of returns and failed attempts to be successful. He got kicked out of the Nexus, and then he tried to come back and feud with them, and that really didn't do anything. Then started being on more on NXT, and then kind of pulled a heel turn, and then he just decided to, but now he can't. But the thing is now is he. Finally found his place, and Titus O'Neil as well, finally found his place in the WWE, teaming with each other. Kudos to now AW being with them. It's really, I mean, just kind of putting everything in perspective, that's exactly what they needed to have that kind of boost on the tag team scene, and so definitely I'm happy that that AW aligned himself with the primetime player. So we'll see where this goes. We'll see, since they are the number one contenders now, they won the match. We'll see if they have a legitimate feud with Kofi and R-Truth, or they just use just another lamb to the slaughter, really. I don't know if they're quite ready to be the number one team in the WWE. They've got some work to do, but at the same time, they're on a really, really good path right now, especially with AW. I'm not too big on AW as a manager, but at the same time, he is sufficient enough to be with them and basically be that driving force to make them a credible tag team. Then we saw a Triple H segment. He calls out Brock Lesnar for SummerSlam. And really from this spot, I just really thought that it could have been done on Raw. We saw more on Raw, but it was just really a waste of a spot. They marketed, they promoted it as some type of big thing. Hey, Triple H is going to appear on No Way Out. But it really didn't do anything to me. I mean, the thing is, you get your pay-per-views, and you know, you have your minor pay-per-views, you have your big four, and the expectation for a minor pay-per-view, you know, shouldn't be as big as the other. But at the same time, it just wouldn't make sense to really push just an appearance of Triple H on a minor pay-per-view. It really makes you see how what stock they're putting in a pay-per-view like No Way Out, and just really how much they're spending time to really think about it. So. Just not wasn't a big fan of it. I was expecting a little bit more when I saw. I was expecting a little bit more when I saw the Triple H appearance instead of just calling Brock Lesnar out for SummerSlam. I guess the era of the internet really kind of sizzles out any type of suspense when it comes to just announcing matches like that. I mean, we're not, you know, an old school, you know, WWE or WCW, where announcing matches had some suspense to it. But now, I mean, people, especially the IWC, they're salivating to see the latest news, and so they definitely don't. Mostly, they don't wait until an actual program. A lot of people already know it beforehand. And have their, you know, their opinion towards it beforehand. So just announcing the match just really didn't do much for me. Then we saw Layla and Beth Phoenix compete against each other for the Divas title. And I'm really getting more and more upset about what they're doing with the Divas Championship scene. It's getting more and more flat. It's getting more and more boring, more and more lifeless. And if we're expecting a big return by Karma, it wouldn't make any sense at all for Beth Phoenix to continue to job to Layla of anyone. I mean, now, don't get me wrong here. Layla's a good wrestler. I like Layla. Overall, I like Layla. But at the same time, you have to consider the fact that Karma and Beth Phoenix has been just really the saving grace of the Divas division. And to basically sabotage Beth Phoenix by having her lose consecutive pay-per-views against Layla, it's terrible. It's ridiculous, and I don't see any points of bringing back Karma just to do this. Now, hopefully they don't bring Karma back as a heel. It just wouldn't make any sense at all, especially, like I said before, from her pregnancy promo that she had when she left last year against the Bella Twins. She was, and then they interrupted it, and she was saying that she'll come back, and hopefully they're still around, which they're not. But at the same time, going against Beth Phoenix as a heel, Beth Phoenix being a heel, that would make the most sense. Now, if she comes back as a heel against Layla, it wouldn't have the type of suspense an expectation and anticipation as a Karma and Beth Phoenix match. So I'm not a fan of this at all. And unfortunately, like I said before, same music by Layla, and it's just not working out for me, at least. Then we go to Sin Cara versus Hunico. Good solid match. not much to say here, of course. Just a spot filler for just a match, just to save some. I mean, just to basically eat up some time and set up for the main event. You know, Sin Cara is a good one. And at the same time, you know, at the same time, I don't know exactly what they're going to do with him. I'm really tired of the WWE just using superstars just to fill up matches and do spot fillers. And you know, that's one of the things to me that is making the product more watered down and less intriguing, just by just having random superstars just win all the time and not really have a certain direction. So I see this with Sin Cara. Since he's been back, really the only thing that he had was the Sin Cara. He had a small feud with Chavo Guerrero, but really the only thing he had was the Sin Cara Azul versus Sin Cara Negro, which was Hunico. Sin Cara Negro was Hunico. And that really wasn't a major angle to look forward to, and a lot of suspense of him being going against Rey Mysterio, possibly last year, but both of them got injured, this year, WrestleMania 28, but both of them got injured, and we didn't see that, so it could be set up for WrestleMania 29. I wouldn't be opposed to it. At least it would have a good story that could be built with it. Hopefully they don't make it a mask versus max match, because that would just be a bad idea. So then we saw the triple threat match, CM Punk against Daniel Bryan against Kane. Sloppy elbow drops by Punk. He continues the sloppy elbow drops. But overall, it wasn't a bad match. A couple near falls. And the only AJ involvement was getting bumped off the ring, but it all kind of panned out at the end because Kane, he took the fall, but he actually, you know, jobbed to CM Punk. And but at the same time, we saw why, because he was feeling for AJ and then turned around and got kicked, and then GTS. But at the end of the match, we saw, or at the end of the match as a whole, we saw AJ kind of fake the whole bump off and kind of look at CM Punk and kind of indicate that you know, she was doing that, you know, for the sake of Punk winning. So, don't necessarily know, and we'll get to Raw here in a minute. Don't know exactly why they are doing this the way that they are. And I don't know. I was kind of thinking about a few things, and I was actually considering, like, is this with AJ's involvement and CM Punk's matches, and with Kane and Daniel Bryan, could we see a start of a Punk heel turn? And so it would be interesting. Personally, if I had my way, I would turn Punk heel, have him keep the title until SummerSlam, and then have Chris Jericho win the title at SummerSlam as a babyface. But there's rumors that he's not going to Fozzy dates, but now there's some new things going on that he actually has been advertised for SummerSlam, and the date that they're going to go on tour, that date is open now, and so we'll see how it goes. But you know, just a little interesting tidbit that could be considered as far as Punk's character getting a little bit more interesting, because it has been a bit stale as of late. And then we saw on Raw Michael Cole have a little stat that was pretty interesting that we'll get to soon. In the meantime, like I said, feel free to call. I'll be taking phone calls all throughout the evening. 347-884-8452. I would love your opinion. Feel free to call and voice what you have in your mind. Once again, the number is 347-884-8452. Next, we saw just a throwaway segment. Ryback defeating two jobbers, which was Dan Delaney and Rob Grimes. The only thing that is worth saying here, two things is that there was two there from based on reports there were two options of Ryback. One, having him beat four jobbers. But what happened, as we saw, Bill DeMott kind of overruled that decision and had him go against two jobbers instead. So either way, it just doesn't make sense. Back to the whole Sin Cara thing that I mentioned. Ryback is another person with just absolutely no direction going on with his career, with his life. And back to, and when I mentioned the flavor of the week, I got a spot for him just to kind of leak that out a little bit. But just he needs something. He needs something. We've mentioned before on the show Tensai. We've mentioned Big Show. But either way, it just doesn't make much sense for Ryback to just keep going over jobbers. I mean, the thing is, it's either two things. It's either the WWE creative staff ultimately out of the mind of, I mean, you know, kind of approved by the mind of Vince McMahon, or originated even. There's two options. One, either saying, okay, we really want to push this guy to the moon and make him someone. Or two, saying, okay, well, we just want to sabotage Ryback's career. He's worth nothing, and he's just pointless. So it makes it tougher for the crowd as a whole to be interested in Ryback anymore. I mean, even the Goldberg chances is sizzled down, because when you think about that, at least he was getting some type of reaction when the crowd was chanting Goldberg. Now, it's just nothing. It's just him just flat out beating up jobbers and people just waiting for the match to be over. So if you want to go ahead and make a decision as far as the career of Ryback is concerned, now's the time to do it. And one other thing I have about this match, and just really with Ryback matches in general, why in the world does Ryback roll the wrestler, one jobber over the other, and put his hands on top of the jobber's back? And I was having that discussion with someone, and I was thinking, okay, so does this mean that the jobber actually defeated the other jobber? And so really Ryback doesn't win? Just a little something to consider. But regardless, it's just something needs to happen. Then we saw the main event of John Cena versus Big Show. In the beginning, the crowd clearly wasn't into the match. To the end, and I'll tell you what, I will give the match this. I did like this good spot at the end with Brodus Clay with the steel chair. And then other wrestlers coming out, such as Santino and Alex Riley and Zack Ryder and Kofi Kingston. Good place to fit Kofi Kingston in, since, you know, he didn't get an opportunity to defend the tag team title. Always good to see Alex Riley, especially on a pay-per-view. That makes it even better. Zack Ryder, he really hasn't been relevant in a while, so good to see him too. And then Santino, we saw him earlier, but, you know, they all tie into the Big Show because the Big Show kind of dominated them and bullied them at one point in time. So it was good to see the five of them align themselves together to stop the Big Show from winning. That was cool. But Cena wins. He AAs John Laurinaitis, but before that, Vince McMahon says the word "you're fired," and you know, that was basically the end of the show. So No Way Out as a whole just wasn't a good pay-per-view to me. It wasn't anything that was worth being surprised at, except for the primetime players and their alignment with AW. And unfortunately, if that is really the high spot of the pay-per-view, that's just a really bad pay-per-view altogether. So we will see where this leads to. Really didn't do much on Raw either. Actually wrote a article on Bleacher Report of the five questions coming from No Way Out in Raw. But just overall, it just wasn't a good couple days as far as leading to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And as we saw on Raw, the beginning of that was Mick Foley. He comes out, hometown, Long Island, New York. He said that he's in charge of Raw and SmackDown this week, and assigns, he books a Kane and Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk and Sheamus match, introduces John Laurinaitis, and then Laurinaitis says, did a really good heel promo. He says before he was fired, he booked a main event for the evening, which was John Cena against himself, Big Show, and David Otunga. Of course, good to see Mick Foley. The only thing is that he looks kind of out of place, and he seemed like he's getting, you know, as far as his physical condition, is getting worse and worse as far as appearance is concerned. But Mick Foley is the man. You know, when the smoke clears and, you know, the dust fades, Mick Foley is the man, and, you know, he definitely was good to see, especially with all the reports of Triple H trying to hold him back and having him be in less and less TV spots. So then we saw CM Punk and Sheamus go against Daniel Bryan and Kane. The stat that I mentioned earlier, Michael Cole said that this is the 211th day as WWE champ for CM Punk, and the fourth longest in 15 years. Two from John Cena, and the other one from JBL. Interesting stat, but like I said before, it's a relatively quiet run because his character is definitely not. I mean, this time last year, I mean, he was getting pushed to the moon, pulled a crazy, it was just about a year ago, very close to a year ago, that he pulled a crazy promo and just really had the most pops of his entire career. Now, just not the same. And it's, you know, I understand how the business is concerning, you know, wrestlers staying important, staying relevant. But at the same time, you just got to, a lot of times it deals with who you're feuding with. And this, you know, the Jericho feuds were great, but it was just wrapped up in TV series drama, and it just didn't really, it took the purity out of the match. It took an element of purity. Not all of it, because it was just a good match, but it took an element of purity out of the match. So I'm just waiting for a good, solid CM Punk feud without, you know, AJ or things like that. I mean, like I said, AJ is a really good character, but for CM Punk to me to be a credible champion again, he just, something has to change. And then AJ, like I said, AJ comes out this time in a smaller spot. She comes out in a Kane outfit and just kind of prances around the ring. Kane gets distracted, and one thing about the match was it was a nice little GTS bro kick combination on Daniel Bryan, so I give him that. But we'll see where AJ, this whole AJ thing and Kane thing leads to, because it's just really bewildering to me, at least. We saw Dolph Ziggler go against Jack Swagger. They had a backstage segment of arguing and find out who the better man was. Vicky Guerrero comes out and says, it just really kind of stops them and then pits a match between the two, and said that she'll, you know, have to have total solidarity, I guess you can say, to the winner. Good match. But at the same time, where does this take the both of them? Like, for instance, we've seen Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero. Now, we need something different. And Jack Swagger, most likely, unless it's some type of face turn, he'll be a superstar's all-star. So it really, that match really didn't do much to the both of them. Didn't really lead a good few. It really didn't lead us anywhere. It really didn't cause any type of cliffhanger or intrigue to find out where they both went. Because as much as I like Vicky Guerrero as a heel, I don't like her character, but I think that she's doing really good at it as a heel. Her and Ziggler, it just has, something has to give, because Ziggler, maybe he needs a manager, but at the same time, there's nothing that is going on right now that is causing him to benefit by being with Vicky Guerrero. And then Jack Swagger, him as a face, I believe it could work, but at the same time, I don't see the WWE putting stock into a Jack Swagger character as a face as much as they're doing with all the other feuds going on right now. I don't think this would be proper timing to make Jack Swagger a face. Maybe going into SummerSlam, possibly. He has a big marquee match a little bit beforehand, maybe at Money in the Bank. He makes the turn, but something needs to give. Something has to happen with either one of them. But it looks like Ziggler will get the go-ahead to have a more promising future, at least in the near future. Then we saw Paul Heyman come out and denies lawsuit drops and SummerSlam match that Triple H proposed at No Way Out. Then he's interrupted by Triple H and a good face-off between the two. They both can cut really good promos, so I definitely am happy that they had this segment to showcase Paul Heyman's mic work, which is stellar. And then eventually, Paul Heyman said that, you know, he basically was just telling Triple H that, you know, that, you know, he knew what was best for him, basically. But, you know, it when Brock Lesnar's music came on, I knew that it wasn't going to be him. I had a really good chance. I had a really good feeling that it was going to be Heyman because of the whole dates thing. I'm not too opposed of them having Paul Heyman come out and do what he's been doing. I'm fine with that, but at the same time, it just doesn't do much for me as far as leading into the pay-per-view. Maybe they could do something like him reading letters from Brock Lesnar, like he kind of did in the first place when he quit. Maybe that could help. Maybe he can do a hybrid between his personal mic work and opinions and then letters from Brock Lesnar. But it's not... And it's not intriguing enough to me to do that. Maybe some video segment with Brock Lesnar, something that will cause some type of intrigue to this match, because as of now, I'm not really interested. Then we saw Santino against Alberto Del Rio. Post-match attack by Ricardo Rodriguez. Maybe they're going to continue this feud between the two. But like I said before, why does Santino have the U.S. title if he doesn't have credible wins? Just a really bad idea for them to continue to do that. And another thing that I want to bring up is I just don't like how – I don't care, and I mentioned this before in my articles – And I mentioned this on the show. I just don't like how the WWE treats any champion. I don't care what type of champion you are, a tag team champion, Intercontinental U.S., or of course the world champions. Nobody when you win a title. I know that the titles are a whole different type of perception right now, especially in the WWE creative staff. But still, I mean, when you have titles and when you have a mid-card level title such as the U.S. title with so much prestige that come by it, that comes behind it, you shouldn't be just some type of whipping boy for a potential main eventer. Bad idea. It could have been somebody else, definitely. And if the whole point was to bring back Alberto Del Rio, at least a spot where Santino wins by disqualification, maybe a couple chair shots, something to not just have him be some type of personal whipping boy for Alberto Del Rio. Now, a lot of people didn't know that he was going to come back. If he did return, you know, since he did return at Raw, it seemed like it would have been a better spot for him to come back at the Sheamus match and then kind of stem that and just kind of rekindle that feud between the two of them. So it was just an odd spot to place Alberto Del Rio, and I'm just not a fan of them doing that at all. If you have any, if you definitely want to call in and want to let us know what you think about Raw and No Way Out, feel free to call in. The number is 347-884-8452. Had some difficulties with Ryan being on the air right now, so if it's most likely it'll be myself, and I would love to hear what you have to say. Once again, the number is 347-884-8452. Continuing with Raw, we have a spot to promote the 1,000th episode on Raw again of Raw on July 23rd. We saw Layla introducing Cyndi Lauper and Wendi Richter, giving them some time and kind of throwing a plug for WrestleMania back in the day when Cyndi Lauper managed Wendi Richter to win her first women's title. It was the women's title back then, and it was interrupted by Heath Slater, who was interrupted by Roddy Piper, and eventually Roddy Piper introduces Cyndi Lauper to a gold record, and she eventually hits Heath Slater. Now, this is something that I actually am liking what they're doing. I actually like what they're doing with Heath Slater. Seemingly he's the Chris Jericho of this go around, as far as the feuds, as far as feuding with the old school wrestlers. We saw that at a WrestleMania a few WrestleManias ago with Chris Jericho. If I'm not mistaken, it was 2009. If I'm not mistaken, so that would have been 26. 2009. Well, I'm sorry. 25 is what 2009 was. So I believe it was 25 where Chris Jericho had the feud with Mickey Rourke, and that was the time where he was doing the whole wrestler movie, and they want to give him a plug, and he Chris Jericho, if I'm not mistaken, had a little gauntlet match with Ricky Steamboat, Roddy Piper, and Jimmy Snuka, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, that was a pretty bad match to me as far as booking Chris Jericho. But, you know, I like to see the old school people every now and then. But that type of match just wasn't really a good idea. That, if I'm not mistaken, the next month they actually had a singles match between Jericho and Steamboat, which is actually a pretty good match relatively. I mean, seeing the age of Ricky Steamboat, it was really good to see him in a solo singles match. And that, to me, that match was a lot better than what we saw at WrestleMania. But I'm liking what they're doing with Heath Slater. Heath Slater's kind of playing that same role. And what it seems like is that he may be the kind of like the brunt end of the wrestlers that they're going to promote until the match, or until the event happens on July the 23rd. So it's cool. Heath Slater really didn't have a spot, and he was just a jobber on all brands, really, Raw, SmackDown, and all, and every other, even Superstars. So for him to have this type of spot, at least he has a designated spot for him to be on, and it's cool. He's a good choice. He's kind of annoying heel, one man band type of thing, and I actually like that. I'm happy with that decision. Then we see the primetime players go against Primo and Epico. And primetime players just kind of walk out on the match. There's not much to say about that other than the fact that it was a good heel move by primetime players, but it really doesn't leave a spot for Primo and Epico. To me, it seems like it's the whole Marty Jannetty, Shawn Michaels type of feel to me. The person who gets turned on tries to get some type of retribution, and then all of a sudden, and then, you know, probably gets a little bit, and then kind of falls into obscurity. And to me, it seems like, unfortunately, Primo and Epico is kind of hitting that way, because they really never established themselves as bona fide baby faces. It doesn't seem like it was a full turn to me. And so, basically, that kind of just leaves them in the limbo stage as far as, you know, are they faces, are they heels? No matter what, they can put on a heck of a show. They have really good matches. Both of them are really good wrestlers. But at the same time, I mean, especially they're still with Rosa, and just kind of tosses up in the air as far as their career. Now, like I said, I'm a big fan of AW being with the primetime players. It really, you know, thrust the velocity of their career is concerned, as far as momentum is concerned. But at the same time, kind of leaves Primo and Epico, you know, in the dark, and doesn't seem like we will be seeing them on a weekly Raw or SmackDown after this whole thing is over with. So we'll see what happens there. Once again, thanks everyone for listening. If you want to call in and voice your thoughts on Raw or No Way Out, feel free to call in 347-884-8452. Thank you so much for listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Just want to take some time again to give a word for our sponsor, which is WrestleManiacs. Like I said before, go to Facebook and type in WrestleManiacs, WrestleManiacs, IACS. WrestleManiacs, and I'm sorry, let me spell that again. WrestleManiacs. WrestleManiacs. Go to the Facebook, WrestleManiacs, and they have some really, really good updates on just different types of programming other than the typical WWE or ROH or TNA program we see on TV. And they have some good programming updates and matches, shows with people that we are familiar with that we kind of wonder who is going to be, you know, who's where they are, and we'll see them, and they promote indie shows. So kudos to WrestleManiacs, our show sponsor. All right, well, let's go back to Raw here. And we saw Chris Jericho return segment. They showed part of a rock concert. So, of course, me being Jericho being my favorite wrestler. If people don't know that, Jericho is my favorite. Not all time, but he's been my favorite for probably the past 15, as far as a favorite is concerned, he's probably been a favorite since probably about coming to the WWE, and that was August of 99. And so he's probably been my favorite since then. When he was in WCW, I liked him too. But Sting is my all-time favorite, and Sting was there, so he definitely wasn't a favorite then. But yeah, he's been a favorite of mine for quite some time. I've actually liked him since ECW. I was happy when he actually beat Pitbull, number two, I believe it was, for the TV title that he won at ECW. And yeah, I liked him since then. He was kind of like an underdog, but kind of had a cruiserweight type of feel to him. And I definitely liked Chris Jericho since then, and I've been a fan ever since. So it would be happy. I mean, he's a bona fide heel. He does an amazing job at it. But it would be happy. I would be happy to see a face run by Chris Jericho. His heel run has been dismal at best. I mean, nothing positive has stemmed from his heel run since he came back in January. And he just really, I mean, he's put over Punk, he's put over Sheamus. But at the same time, I mean, they were already established stars, so he really didn't do anything to help anyone. He was in good, you know, decent feuds and ended up just kind of putting people over. So nothing to really help his career at all. And so I think a face turn will kind of atone what we have been seeing of Chris Jericho. Like I said before, I think this suspension is kind of like a blessing in disguise, because it seemed like his next target was Randy Orton, and there would have been a really good chance that he would have jobbed to Orton. So, especially since the proposed feud was Orton and Sheamus, a match at SummerSlam, so it seemed like Jericho would have been just a throwaway feud for Orton until SummerSlam, and that would have been even worse. I would never put Jericho in a throwaway feud, actually being a recipient of it. I would never put that in the same category. So it kind of works out all together, and he's having this countdown. I believe it was 5 days away as of yesterday, and so he'll be able to officially come back for Raw. So we'll see. There's a good chance that even being gone for a month, he's going to receive some pops. I'm sure not as many as he did when he came in January, but I'm sure, you know, he'll receive some good pops, and it'll definitely be a good catapult, a good jump start for him to have a good solid face run. So hopefully they make that decision. I just don't want to see the same just monotonous Chris Jericho character that we've been seeing this year. It just really hasn't helped anything. Next, we see the main event, which was John Laurinaitis, David Otunga, and Big Show against John Cena. Then we said one quick thing. It kind of happened on No Way Out too. Is no pyro for the Big Show, so kind of surprised me a little bit on that. And he didn't have any pyro this time too. So, but what happened was the Big Show ended up walking out, and he said that he's beat John Cena before. He doesn't see a purpose of wrestling the match, and eventually he tells John Laurinaitis that he's going to decide not to he's going to decide not to wrestle in the match and kind of walk out. And then it was just ended up being John Laurinaitis and David Otunga against John Cena. And then we saw David Otunga go against John Cena for a while. And then eventually John Cena, and then John Laurinaitis comes in, kind of fakes the whole injury thing that he's been doing, and kind of tries to beat up on John Cena. And then eventually he didn't, it just kind of stopped, and Cena beats up on Laurinaitis, and then Otunga realized that he's fired and there's no point of, you know, being his subordinate anymore, and he walks out on John Laurinaitis as well. And then we saw John Cena wins, and everybody's happy. He gives him 3 AAs, and that's really what we saw. So, like I said, I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about just what they're doing and just how none of it really led to the next pay-per-view. Now, they have pay-per-views every month, and so basically there's usually, with the exception of WrestleMania, it's usually only a 3 to 4 week build, sometimes really 2 week build to the next pay-per-view. So they really need to take advantage of every opportunity, especially since the 3-hour Raw doesn't start until after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. The Money in the Bank, I believe, is July the 15th. And so it didn't start until the, you know, not the following Monday, but the Monday after that. So it just doesn't make sense. And I definitely think that they should have done something to lead until the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. So if you have any, anybody listening out there have any comments about No Way Out or Raw, feel free to call in 347-884-8452. Then we go to SmackDown. SmackDown, just like we do every week, basically just go down the SmackDown results and just kind of analyze and highlight some moments and analyze the show as a whole. We saw AJ in the ring and interrupted by Vicky Guerrero. Vicky Guerrero presents Dolph Ziggler and goes back and forth with AJ, and eventually AJ gets slapped by Vicky. Then was interrupted. Then they were interrupted by CM Punk and then Daniel Bryan and then Sheamus. That led to Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler against CM Punk and Sheamus, and Bryan and Ziggler wins. Post-match fight between AJ and Vicky, and Kane comes out to tend to AJ, and we saw an attack by CM Punk, and then Kane chokeslams Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. Brodus Clay defeats Heath Slater, and then a post-match attack by David Otunga to lead to the pre-show match, which Brodus Clay won. And we saw Beth Phoenix defeat Alicia Fox. John Laurinaitis and Big Show segment, and Show cuts a promo, and he mentions Hogan, Sting, and Flair, and then he explains the stage name. Christian defeats Jack Swagger. Ryback defeats Ari Cohen and Mike Tensa. Damian Sandow defeats Tyson Kidd. and John Cena and John Laurinaitis segment. Cena punches John Laurinaitis, and basically that's how we got the stipulation. If John Cena loses at No Way Out, he was fired. Not really much that came out of this show to me. Another person that I'm wondering what they're going to do, as I mentioned with Sin Cara and Ryback, would be Damian Sandow. Now he does great promos. I'm a big fan of his promos and what they're doing. I don't really like his Rick D'Amato Martel style gear. I hope he changes that quickly. But other than that, I like his character, his brashness, his cockiness. I'm a fan of that. And just not really much other than honing AJ's character, which I like. But as we saw on No Way Out and Raw, just not there wasn't much exposure for her. And so I'm wondering exactly what they're going to do. They have Beth Phoenix defeat Alicia Fox just to gain some type of steam for Layla. But as we saw, it just was pointless. It really didn't do anything because, unfortunately, Beth Phoenix jobbed again. So I have no idea. I mean, if they want to set up her and Karma at SummerSlam, the WWE needs to get going fast as far as setting her up and having her be dominant, because losing twice, like I said, against Layla is just a bad, bad idea, and it really really fizzles out any type of steam that Beth Phoenix could have. So overall, not too good of a SmackDown as far as a go-home show, but at the same time, I guess the WWE felt it did its purpose, although it really wasn't that intriguing. Onward to Impact Wrestling, last Thursday's edition of live edition of Impact Wrestling. We saw Austin Aries defeat Zema Ion and Chris Sabin in an Ultimate X match. Then we saw D-Von defeat Hernandez. James Storm, he wins the Bound for Glory gauntlet and gains 20 points. And now cuts a post-match promo. Bobby Roode, backstage interview. Then we saw Miss Tessmacher defeat Madison Rayne. And backstage segment with Gail Kim and Brick Hogan. Bobby Roode defeats Mr. Anderson. Mr. Anderson won the number one contenders match at Slammiversary. It's become the number to get this main event match. Then we saw Sting's speech. He was inducted. He was announced to be inducted at Slammiversary into the as being the first ever inductee of the TNA Hall of Fame. And then he was interrupted by three masked men. Now I'm gonna say this, I've been watching TNA since its inception in 2002, and you know, there was some good spots though over the past 10 years. There were some good moments and bad moments. I'm gonna say I've liked TNA throughout the course. Overall, I've liked TNA. I've liked the product as a whole, as far as their quality of matches and things like that. The booking and writing isn't the best because a lot of it was influenced by Vince Russo for a long time, but at the same time, right now we're experiencing the Hogan Bischoff era. I'm very critical about the Hogan and Bischoff era because it really didn't promise what it was. It really didn't manifest what it promised to deliver, and I've been really critical for it. I've been really critical with the era, but since this year as a whole, I've been not too critical because it's actually on the uprise as far as the product is concerned as a whole. The live editions really help the quality And I, like I said before, I think it was last week, I mentioned that I wrote an article on the Bleacher Report about five things that could help TNA kind of lessen the gap between being the number two show. And one of them is definitely just not having at the impact zone every week. It definitely needs to move out more. It's live now, and if you have it live and at somewhere other than Orlando, Florida, in the impact zone, just, you know, it would help a lot more as far as gaining more support for the product. So as far as the match, as far as the show is concerned, really, really good match, Ultimate X match between Aries, Zema Ion, and Sabin. Definitely a good way to start the show with the Ultimate X match. And Austin Aries gets his opportunity to become a star, become the top guy. They usually dedicate their Destination X pay-per-view to X-Division stars, and he has the X-Division championship. I think it was a good concept to incorporate that all-or-nothing match that Hogan offered Austin Aries and told him he has a week to figure it out. And, of course, it seems like he was actually willing to say yes at the time, so it seemed like it would be a no-brainer of what he'll do, probably just to draw out more suspense. They just said, just kind of make it another week, just to, you know, just to add more suspense and just to add more intrigue to it. But I think it's pretty much a no-brainer, like I said. Then, you know, D-Von continuing his TV title ways. I'm cool with that. I like the TV title being defended on and on every week. It should be like that, definitely. So, and then the Miss Tessmacher, debuts a new finisher. I definitely think that's a good idea, because her little seemed like atomic drop to face plant finisher just wasn't working out. And plus, she's the champion, so she definitely needs more of a finisher that each and every time isn't a high risk botch move. So that was a good idea. Brick Hogan's backstage segment is just shows how green she is. She's got a lot of work to do, and a lot of times you can tell when someone's heart is really in it. And she actually made a comment before that it was just kind of a temporary thing, but it didn't really seem like her heart's in it, and kind of can tell. And so, you know, I don't know how far this this will last, but I really hope it expires soon as far as her being the Knockouts vice president or whatever her title is. And then the final segment, the Sting speech interrupted by the three masked men, I think that was a very good idea. Good way to end the show. Good way to carry it over to this week's show, airing on Thursday. And then, of course, you know, just who done it angles like that, or reveal angles like that. Definitely, it causes a pay-per-view or an event or a show to have an elevated element of intrigue, and finding out who the masked men were and just kind of carrying it over like that. I think that was a very good idea. So very interested to see who the three masked men were, and it seems like it would be a good time to bring back Jeff Jarrett, so maybe he is one of the masked men. We'll quickly go to ROH TV, and then we'll go to the Flavor of the Week. ROH had Mike Bennett defeating Adam Page. It was Adam Page's debut match on ROH TV, only 20 years old, but he had a good showing. Post-match appearance by Eddie Edwards, and basically Mike Bennett throws Brutal Bob to Eddie Edwards and said that they're going to be competing against each other next week, and Eddie Edwards accepts, of course. Kevin Steen promo, nicely done as always. The Briscoe defeats Sam Shaw and QT Marshall. Roderick Strong defeats Tommaso Ciampa by DQ, as we saw Prince Nana get upset with Roderick Strong hitting him and causing Ciampa the TV title. A decent show, a little bit more action than it was last week, and so I definitely give it to them. Like I said all the time, I like the product a lot, and they definitely get my hats off to them for sure. So definitely some good quality action. Good to see that. It was a very good TV title match, as I expected. They're two heels, so it definitely kind of makes it a weird a little bit, because I think, you know, any big match with two heels, it's kind of weird. Two faces is fine if it's booked right, but two heels is kind of weird to me. So definitely a good overall solid ROH show. Finally, we'll get to the flavor of the week. And the flavor of the week this week is the WWE versus TNA Dream Match pay-per-view. I'll first start off, and this basically would be a pay-per-view that I will book, and it would be all the matches starting from first to last. The first match would be Dolph Ziggler versus Austin Aries. I wrote an article about this on Bleach Report, and feel free to check it out, bleachreport.com. And Chris Featherstone, look me up. And it's WWE versus TNA Dream Match pay-per-view. I would have Austin Aries going over Ziggler. One of the definitely show stealer candidate. This probably would be the number one match, because it would just be a really, really, really good match. Next, I would have R-Truth and Kofi Kingston going over Daniels and Kazarian. Wouldn't have the luster as Angle and AJ match at Slammiversary, but at the same time, they definitely would put together a really, really good match between the four of them. Then I would have Ryback going over Samoa Joe. Ryback finally gets a credible win. They have similar finishes. Ryback's kind of cradle buster, and of course, Samoa Joe's muscle buster. There would be a really big smash mouth match, and it definitely, out of anybody, Samoa Joe would be a good person to put against Ryback, because, you know, he doesn't sweat anybody, not intimidated, and it would be a good small little build for the show. Then I had Kurt Angle going over Jack Swagger. I mean, not really much to explain there. I mean, both have amateur backgrounds, and then, you know, both share the same finisher, and it would just be a really good wrestling clinic between the two. And of course, Kurt Angle would go over on the on Jack Swagger with the angle lock. And then I had Big Show and Abyss going against each other, Battle of the Big Man. Big Show is the heel, of course. Abyss is the face. I actually had Abyss going over the Big Show with a toughly executed black hole slam that the Abyss could definitely do on Big Show. It would take a lot of Big Show's help, but at the same time, it wouldn't be as bad as a Kane choke slam on the Big Show, as we saw on Raw a few weeks ago. And then I had Daniel Bryan going over AJ Styles. Throughout the day said they would like Daniel Bryan versus Kurt Angle. The reason why that would be an amazing match. The reason why I would have Bryan and Styles is because, of course, it would be similar to an AJ Styles Kurt Angle match that we've seen on TNA. AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan kind of share a lot of similarities as far as wrestling style is concerned, as far as just like kind of a high tempo type of style that they have. Of course, Daniel Bryan and Kurt Angle are more submission specialists, but it definitely would be a nice little element to the match with some more high flying and aerial attacks with AJ Styles. Daniel Bryan would go over on that one in a really, really good match. Then I would have John Cena versus Crimson. And let me quickly explain this. John Cena versus Crimson. Crimson was on the big nearly year and a half streak, and it was broken by a former world champion. So John Cena didn't have to beat. This would be more of a higher or upper level match. Crimson would be suitable for John Cena. They both have, you know, a build to them, and Crimson doesn't have to be a main eventer for John Cena to go on the card. You have to think of the card for John Cena to compete against him on the card. You have to think of the card all together, and John Cena and Crimson would be a match. It wouldn't be a main event match, but the whole point of the card is not to have every single match be like a main event match per se, just a whole card as a whole. Then I would have CM Punk going over Bully Ray. Bully Ray tries to intimidate CM Punk. CM Punk's an amazing promo cutter, and, you know, he would try to, you know, basically Bully Ray, like I said, he would try to punk, so to speak, but Punk would pull a good promo and eventually get the best of Bully Ray and go over Bully Ray. Triple H and Bobby Roode, similar styles, similar builds. Bobby Roode is the guy in TNA. He goes over Triple H, of course not clean. Then finally, Undertaker versus Sting. It was definitely one of the biggest rumors of 2011. Undertaker and Sting. Sting even reported that and admitted that he was very close to signing with the WWE and going against Undertaker at WrestleMania 27. A lot of people know that Sting's my all-time favorite wrestler, but unfortunately I would have the Undertaker go over, as much as it hurts me to say that. I would have the Undertaker go over Sting, and just because it would, you know, it would kind of be WWE supremacy, the number one show, and that would be the main event. So, you know, solely for the purposes of that, it would make sense for The Undertaker, WWE franchise guy. He goes over, you know, Sting, who was inducted into TNA. So kind of like the franchise of WWE against the first ever Hall of Fame inductee of TNA, WWE reigns supreme, and The Undertaker wins. So feel free, you know, to let me know your thoughts on that by going to Bleacher Report and giving me your comments on that. Or if you have any other Flavor of the Week topics that you think is worth talking about, email us at cravewrestling@gmail.com, and we'll consider them. And definitely, if there's a Flavor of the Week topic that's worth talking about, we'll make it happen. Follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling, and also like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/cravewrestling and like us. We're all about, you know, making this a successful show for you. So if you'd like to give, PayPal, cravewrestling@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening to me this week, and we will be here next week. Have a great week, and be blessed.